For centuries, cash was king, but in recent years, it looked at risk of being dethroned. Bank branches closing, ATMs disappearing, signs saying card only popping up everywhere. Ireland seemed to be drifting towards a cashless future. But now the government has hit the brakes on cashless, with new rules to ensure people can access good old-fashioned paper money whenever they need. So what's changed? Are we rowing back from the great cashless experiment? It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. Now tap your phone, tap your watch, tap your card, revolute your mates. Forget what it used to feel like to have coins rattling around in your pocket or your purse. A fully cashless Ireland didn't just look possible in recent years, it actually looked inevitable. And then somewhere along the way, that confidence cracked. The pandemic, it seems, may have sped things up. And many cafes went cash-free for hygiene reasons, we were told. But then banks started pulling their physical services from rural towns. And we've all mourned the local post offices disappearing in their hundreds. But we've also begun to wise up, it seems. A cashless future isn't necessarily a better one. If the power goes out, the card machine goes with it. If a bank pulls out, the town loses its lifeline. And if everything is digital, then every transaction also becomes data that can be bought and sold. So along with the new rules guaranteeing an ATM within 10 kilometres of every person in Ireland, the government is also just about to advise us all to keep cash at home for emergencies. Europe's central banks are saying the same thing. Cash, it seems, isn't a relic, it's resilience. Because in a crisis, cash, it seems, is still king. Now, on today's podcast, I'll speak to Brett Scott, author of Cloud Money, Cash, Cards, Crypto and the War on Our Wallets. He says the cashless future isn't progress at all, it's actually a power grab. And we'll also hear in a little while from the money doctor, John Lowe, who's a big supporter of the move to all things cashless. First, though, it's Newstalk's political correspondent, Sean Defoe, who joins me now to explain what these new cash laws actually mean. Sean, welcome back to Newstalk Daily. Are you a cash favourer yourself, or have you gone fully digital?
No, I'm one of these digital natives now, apparently. I was trying to remember the last time I used cash in day-to-day. I think the only time is when you go to particularly a rural town or even some parts of the city and you find a car park that doesn't take card. And it infuriates me now because then you're there like, I have nothing. So I keep a small stash of coins in my car. Probably shouldn't say that in public, should I? Lest my car be broken into. But anyway, there you go. It's not that if they do, they're getting about a fiver. So no, I don't use cash a whole pile. And I had really avoided using Apple Pay for years. I didn't trust it, didn't like it. And then kind of post-pandemic, it sort of crept in. And now I find myself even leaving the wallet at home. And I'm one of these annoying people who just holds their phone up when they're paying for their, you know, caramel latte frappuccino.
You disappoint me. I'm an absolute cash queen. I love cash. I will always have cash on my purse. And I panic if I don't have cash. And I find it's also great for backing yourself a little bargain. You can always negotiate if you have a few euro in your wallet rather than just tapping. Tell me about these new regulations, though.
Never negotiated. On anything like that. It shocks me the amount of people in Tesco, you know, when you're queuing up for the self-service and there's some of them that don't do cash and there's some of them do.
Yeah.
There's always two or three people ahead of me who are like, you go ahead, I'm not paying. And I just don't get it. I think it's sort of remarkable post-COVID. But yes, look, these new laws, there are obviously a lot of people and really a surprising amount of people who responded to a survey, I think it was by the Department of Finance. They did research in 2024. Found 92% of people saying that they use cash, which was up from 91% in the last survey they did. So a lot of people, I'm clearly in the minority here when it comes to using cash. But what this new legislation will mean, it was already in place. Simon Harris just activated it as pretty much the first thing he's done as finance minister. And it basically means that the three main pillar banks are going to be responsible for ensuring that the majority of people will have access, 97% of people will have access to a cash service point, aka an ATM, within a 10-kilometre radius of their home. So there will be access to cash there, and comes on the back of, as you mentioned in your intro, a lot of pushback in recent years. But of course, the difficulty, and Banking Payments Federation Ireland has been pointing this out as well, is that the banks don't actually run an awful lot of these ATMs. It's Brinks or Euronet or some other companies that mightn't have a huge corporate presence in Ireland, but do have a huge presence in terms of those ATMs. And also, there isn't anything really in the legislation about them actually being usable, because the few times I have used cash and tried to go into an ATM, they're either out of cash, they're out of order, or the limits have gone down to basically nothing, and you can only take out 100, 150 euro at a time. So on one hand, the cash will be there in theory. The practice might be a bit different for people.
In smaller amounts. And is there anything, do we have any rules and regulations around commission charges, for example? Because if it's not the banks and you're not, say, an AIB customer and you're using an AIB ATM, but you're using one of those Eurolink ones, I see it. You see it if you're overseas and you need to take out cash, which you probably don't, but sometimes I will. And there are huge commission charges because you're using a non-bank ATM. Any protection or guidance around that for consumers?
Yeah, well, the legislation does mean that the finance minister will have the power to ban ATM cash withdrawal charges. So that is going to be within the gift of the government. And you're right, you'd often see it, and probably when a lot of people use cash is when they go abroad and they take out stuff and you end up with 2 or 3%, it comes out straight away. Or even in the airport, if you're trying to change currency, it can be a nightmare and they charge you knowing you don't, or at least didn't in the past, have a huge amount of other options. Doesn't tend to happen with Irish consumers at home, but it can happen. So the finance minister is going to have the power. He hasn't said specifically whether he'll do that, but I imagine he will.
You've seen I've certainly seen local restaurants and cafes and barbers, for example, where they either have a cash only sign or a cards only sign. Anything in the legislation around that, or should all retail outlets be accepting of both?
They should be accepting of both. Yet you haven't seen the reality of that. There are some places that will only take cash, and you would have to certainly question what is happening mm-hmm. to some of that cash. But mm-hmm. look, you know, that is up for revenue to pursue. But places, shops in particular, are required to take legal tender, and that legal tender can be card or cash.
Why did this become a political issue?
I think the big thing that kicked it off. So obviously, we went through the pandemic. The pandemic was, you know, once in 100 years sort of a thing. You could understand why people moved away from cash when germs were being spread. And I thought that would be the watershed moment. To be honest, I thought that would be the death of cash, except for people who were maybe older and more used to it and couldn't get their head around the technology or didn't trust it. Fine. Instead, we've seen the opposite. And the banks really thought that the pandemic was going to be the end of cash as well. And I suppose the biggest incident, the one that got the most backlash, was when AIB said it was going to make 70 of its branches cashless across the country, some of those being in rural Ireland. And there was a massive backlash to it. There were a number of TDs, including, I think it was Matthew McGrath, Michael Collins and Danny Healy-Ray, actually staged a protest at AIB HQ in Molesworth Street and had a sit-in demanding to see the CEO, Colin Hunt, at the time. And eventually, just as it was becoming before the Fine Gael parliamentary party, I think within minutes of the two of them having a row about it, AIB rode back on that and said, no, actually, we're not going to do it. We accept all of the criticism that there are people in parts of the country who need access to cash, particularly older people, and we have changed our mind. Now, obviously, it makes things quite a bit easier for them. If we were a cashless society, in that from the sheer management of money, keeping money on the premises, security, staff, everything else, I think if the banks in their heart of hearts, if you ask some of the senior executives, would be very happy, because you might just have to have one person in a branch who opens and closes and the rest is done by an automated machine. Again, difficult for certain people and more vulnerable people in society. So that's what kicked it off. Eventually, there was a backlash against it and kind of prompted this access to cash bill, really from the backbenches of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, but also other rural TDs and rural independents in particular, to make sure that in legislation, in law, there is that requirement. People will have to have a certain number of ATMs per 100,000 people, but also access within an easy vicinity of them.
Tell me about this advice that we've heard about in recent weeks, that the government is poised to suggest to people that they do leave amounts of cash at home in case of emergencies.
Sounds very doomsday, doesn't it?
Like
The Walking Dead or something, that you're going to need to be a doomsday prepper and stock up tins of chickpeas and a few quid as well in the house. But this is
chickpeas in your house, Sean Defoe. It's baked beans in mine.
Yeah, okay, right. Look, I'm showing myself to be very bougie here with no cash, chickpeas in the press and my oat milk latte frappuccinos.
I'm paying the price that's asked for everything.
Well, I mean, sorry, go into this a bit more. Where do you negotiate? Do you walk into Tesco and say, I'm not paying €4 for that. I'll give you three.
No, not necessarily Tesco, but you'd go in somewhere and you'd do the old, the bill comes to €21. Oh, listen, I can give you 20 cash or you can use my card. In the vast majority of cases, if it's a small business, if it's a taxi driver, they will take the cash.
I'm going to have to try this out.
You are going to have to try this out. I'm a firm believer, though, that you spend less money when you're carrying cash and when you're paying cash. You mindlessly pay for things when you're tapping. And if you start out from a budgeting point of view, and I think that's why these 92% of people in that Department of Finance survey were saying, no, actually, we want to hold on to cash, because obviously not all of the 92%. But we're still dealing with cost of living issues. And it's just easier to budget and it's easier to keep a track of yourself. And you spend less money if you're actually paying cold, hard cash.
Yeah, well, my wife is a business journalist and she did a piece recently on cash stuffing. Have you heard about this? There's like, to do your budgeting, instead of like that, you go out somewhere. Oh, sure, that's nice. I'll tap. I'll take that. You budget X amount for whatever it is, be it, 100 for groceries or 100 for petrol, whatever. You put them into separate envelopes and then you just spend that.
Yep.
And because it's cash, you can keep an eye on it and you go, oh, actually, I'm running down and I have 2 weeks to payday, and that it's a very effective thing to do. I've kind of wondered about walking around with different envelopes of cash. I'm not sure I'd be one to do that. I feel like I would lose it very, very easily. But a lot of people say that it works. And you can try and do it online digitally with these pockets and all these other things. It doesn't 100% work. Mm. But look, you asked me about the doomsday stuff, keeping cash in case of emergencies. And that makes an element of sense. If we are a largely cashless society, all of that is digital. Would you say Ireland's digital infrastructure is the most safe in the world? Probably not. Are we vulnerable to cyber attack? Probably. We've seen it in other parts of the economy and indeed in other countries as well. So the government is going to advise, along with the European Union and other banks and governments, to have, I think they recommend, up to 72 hours what you would need in 72 hours in cash somewhere in the house.
For every member of your household, though, it's key. For every member of your household. So in other words, if you feel you need €50 for 72 hours, but it has to be for, you, the three kids, the dog, whatever, but you're supposed to have an amount. Or that's certainly the advice that we believe is coming down the track. And I, again, this is whatever about if there's a cyber attack. We saw in Spain and Portugal earlier this year where the electricity infrastructure just collapsed.
Yeah, completely. And if that does, you're goosed. What are you going to do? You have to have your cash. And it makes just everything so difficult. But even, there would be chaos there regardless of whether you had cash or not in shops around the place when they're trying to do a stock take or scan what the prices are. It would be a nightmare. But to have that money on side is certainly something that is going to be recommended and put aside. Where you keep that money, do you stuff it in the mattress or hide it somewhere safe in the home? That's a whole other thing. But to have it on side, because ultimately, look, you can get doomsday about it. You can think about the end of the world. God knows we've spent long enough talking about that with everything going on in the last couple of years. If every asset you have is digital and that were to suddenly disappear overnight, what have you got left? Not a lot.
Not a lot. Sean Defoe, thanks a million for your time today. And I'm going to challenge you. We're going to do this, and maybe we'll do this for one of the shows on News Talk. We'll do a week where you use your digital payments and I'll use cash, and we'll see which one of us saves more money at the end.
Oh, well, this sounds like a way for me to lose money. But yes, that sounds good, Tara. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your time, Sean. Now, we reached out to the money doctor, John Lowe, who knows all things money, for his thoughts on this move away from cash and indeed the new government rules ensuring that we're not going that way. He sent us this voice note.
This is John Lowe of moneydoctors.ie. I am in favour of a cashless society. I brought some sterling over recently to go to see Tottenham, my team, play pathetically at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And as I arrived in the stadium, I was greeted with a kind of a voice over from the Tannoy system saying, this is a cashless stadium. You can only use credit cards. So I've got a couple of hundred sterling going over to that match. I brought the entire 200 sterling back to Ireland. Yes, it is becoming very much a cashless society. And at the same time, it suits me. I mean, as I said, I can't remember the last time I actually used the actual credit card physically itself, because I use the phone all the time. It's very handy. It's convenient. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to. And it doesn't get lost. And I always have, whatever about a credit card, I will never lose my phone. But certainly it would be a worry, a cashless society for the black economy. It would be a worry for probably older people who are not as much into technology as maybe they should be. But also the fact that it can be confusing if they know exactly what cash is and how it works. But then you've got the security issues of cash as well. If people know that you've got cash in your house, you become a target, essentially. Certainly, I suppose, ambivalent at the fact that the government have decided to bring in legislation to at least promise that there will always be cash. And that's fair enough as well. It will certainly give some comfort to those who do want to use cash going forward.
Now, Brett Scott, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily. John Lowe, a skeptic. I'm a huge fan of cash. Tell me, who benefits from a cashless society and who gets left behind?
Primary beneficiaries are the banking sector and the tech sector, because they're the ones who actually run the infrastructure. Bear in mind that what most people want in society is a choice between different types of things, right? So, for example, in a transport system, you might want a choice between trains and cars and bicycles. So most people actually like to keep choices like that, but who doesn't like choices tends to be the industries themselves, because they want to monopolize things. So of course, the banking sector and the tech sector all want a cashless society because it means there's no competition for their own products. So they're the primary beneficiaries. And you know, this is why I often call cash the bicycle of payments. A person might want to use Uber, but that doesn't mean they want to discard their mountain bike. You know, similarly, people might find digital payments convenient in certain types of situations, but that's not a reason that you then discard the cash system. In fact, the cash system is a crucial underpinning to the digital systems themselves, and actually provides this balance of power in the monetary system. But of course, the industries want to get rid of it.
And if banks and big tech are the winners here, who are the losers? And are there losers in this scenario?
Yeah, you know, I actually don't use this phrase left behind. People often say who gets left behind by a cashless society, but that phrase implies that you believe a cashless society is the act of moving forward into some kind of progress. But the reality is it's not. The cashless society is a situation where you become captured by the banking sector and big tech. That's not progress. A good, healthy society has this balance of power between these different types of forms of payment, right? But yeah, if you do move into a society where your entire payment system is dominated by the banking sector and big tech through the digital payments, then of course, people who either can't use those systems who don't want to use those systems get hurt, you know, and that includes a range of people from, you know, often, you know, the previous speaker, he just said something like, you know, elderly people, but it's not just elderly people. So for example, people with visual impairments actually find cash much easier to use than trying to use an app. Also people who are poorer, but generally the financial sector doesn't want to serve poorer people because they're less profitable, all right? Which is why there's a historic connection between cash usage and lower socioeconomic groups. Also because poorer groups tend to find cash easier to budget with because it has more sort of this physicality. I mean, this is one of the main reasons why the big payments companies promote digital payments, is that it actually increases spending and indebtedness, right? Visa actively speaks about this when it's trying to convince businesses to refuse cash. It tells them customers will spend up to 20 to 40% more when you force them to use digital payments than when they're using cash.
Mm. So how have the banks and the card companies coerced us essentially into going cashless? I mean, obviously, particularly here in Ireland, we were maybe a little bit slow to the party. I mean, I remember using cashless payments in Australia in the late 1990s. They didn't land in Ireland, I'd say, till nearly the mid-2000s. COVID has obviously played a role in moving that forward for more people, maybe even older people who might have been slow to adopt apps or slow to adopt digital payments, kind of had to get with the program essentially during COVID. But there are clearly other methods that the banks have been using to coerce us into this.
Well, incidentally, COVID actually doesn't necessarily support your example, because actually at the outset of COVID, there was a massive spike in cash withdrawals, precisely because people basically don't trust the banking sector when there's crises. You know, this is something that the US, the Federal Reserve will actively talk about. You know, when a hurricane's about to hit the US, a massive spike in cash usage because people basically want offline money. So, but that aside, the primary methods that the banking sector and fintech companies, well, primarily the banking sector, has actually used over time is that they shut down the infrastructure. All right. And they often, when they shut down bank branches, when they shut down ATMs, the way they always phrase it is they say, oh, well, but nobody wants these. This is why we're shutting them down. But the reality is it's the act of shutting them down that takes the option away and actually makes cash harder to use, which creates a self-fulfilling prophecy where it indeed becomes harder to use once the infrastructure is shut down. So it creates this kind of feedback loop. All right. So the primary like pillars of the cash infrastructure are cash availability, which are the ATMs and branches. And then there's cash acceptance, right? Which is will places take it? And then there's a third pillar, which is the cash deposit facilities. But if the banks are, say, shutting down the deposit facilities, so make it harder for businesses to deposit cash, it means more businesses are more likely to, quote unquote, go cashless because they're finding it harder to use the infrastructure. And so there's all these feedback loops that kick in. And those are active policy choices made by the banking sector, which is why this legislation comes out to say you can't do this.
And I was just going to say, made the policy changes made by the banking sector, but supported largely as well by government. I mean, I suppose, are we a bit of an outlier here in Europe in this new legislation, which will protect our right to have access to cash and use it?
Yeah, well, for a long time, governments have been totally inert on this issue, and central banks in particular, because, you know, central banks, they always have this, they pretend to be what they call neutral. So they say, well, we don't want to interfere in what's going on in the monetary system. But of course, the banking sector is not neutral. It's actively tried to undermine the cash system for a long time. So what you really need is for public sector institutions to come out and say, hey, we need to provide this public option of money, this public physical form of money, which acts as a counterpower to the banking sector. And this actually requires active legislation, all right? And for a long time, lots of states haven't done that because often they actually want to please the banking sector rather than challenge it. I am pleased to see that they are coming out and taking at least some kind of stand. And that's very, very important.
Do you think it can always remain thus, or do you think there will come a time where a completely cashless future is what we're dealing with?
Oh, no, I totally expect a resurgence of cash in future, actually, especially in the context of geopolitical tensions, things like climate change, resource shortages. All digital hype is based on the unrealistic assumption that there can be this endless digitization, which from a resource perspective and a kind of geopolitical stability perspective is totally unrealistic. Actually, anybody in national security circles knows this. For example, in Sweden, one of the most cashless societies in the world, the government has started to encourage citizens to start to keep cash precisely because they're concerned about a geopolitical conflict with Russia. All right. This has been something they talk about for a long time. Anybody in national security circles knows this.
And indeed, our department is poised to issue very similar advice here in Ireland in the coming weeks.
It's stupid to be totally dependent upon fragile digital infrastructures, you know, not only from a geopolitical perspective, just, but, you know, simple hacking attacks can take down your entire economy if everyone's relying upon Visa and MasterCard. One of the previous speakers was saying, oh, he finds it convenient. Well, I guarantee it's not going to be very convenient once you've basically your entire economy freezes with a single hacking attack on the payments infrastructure. You want to think about cash as being a bit like the emergency stairs in a skyscraper. You know, you might find the elevator convenient, but that doesn't mean you remove the stairs.
Is the end of cash the end of privacy? I mean, I am a fan of cash because for all of the reasons you've outlined, I think it helps me budget. I spend less. I feel more secure with it in my pocket or in my purse. But I also just skeptically, I'm concerned about the data that is being potentially collected about me and my habits and my practices every time I tap my card. Do I need to be worried about that? Should we be more concerned about that?
Yes, because financial data is the most sensitive type of data in the world. For example, I mean, think about if you're on Google and you're typing in a search on Google, you know, you might be searching for all sorts of things you might just sort of generally interested in or your future aspirations, right? That's a certain type of data. But what you actually spend on shows what you actually act upon in society rather than your hopes and dreams. It shows you, you know, that your actual actions, you know, the phrase, you put your money where your mouth is very relevant here. All right. So when people have your financial data, they can really see how you're actually acting in society. And this is why it's a very, very powerful form of data. And of course, all the people in the digital payment sector love this type of data, right? Because it's really, you know, in an age of data extraction, it's one of the big frontiers. And of course, every cash transaction that happens is a data point that has not been collected. So the banking sector, when they're pushing for digital payments, it's not only that they're making fees from the payments infrastructure via the card systems, but they're also gathering data at the same time. And that's also very valuable to them.
Indeed. And valuable to others as well. Brett Scott, author of Cloud Money, Cash, Cards, Crypto, and the War of Our Wallets. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. Thanks also to Sean Defoe and John Lowe. Love to hear your thoughts on the move towards cashless and the new rules on the access to ATMs. Are you a cash queen like myself, or are you strictly digital? You can email us anytime. newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. That's it from Newstalk Daily today. I'll be back with another edition bright and early tomorrow morning. Until then, good luck.